Good afternoon, everyone. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today. My name is John Snyder. I'm the Assistant Professor of Common Physiology at the University of Georgia, and I'm located in Tifton. I'm Glenn's successor, so I'd like the opportunity to talk to you today about physiological responses of cotton to water deficit in Georgia. So the first thing, I just took a quote out of the plant physiology text that water is expensive and must be used efficiently. If surface water is used, dams and waterways must be constructed and maintained, and if water is pumped from the ground, energy must be expended to raise it to the surface. And many of the farmers that I'll talk to will tell me that water is fairly inexpensive for them, and this depends obviously on how deep of a well that, you know, that you're pumping from. But ultimately, if regulations come into play, as there's more competition for water resources between agricultural development and municipalities, regulations can definitely make water application expensive. And efficiency can be increased by improving irrigation management. And this is a big area of research through scheduling. There's some other possibilities there for improving water management. And then utilizing drought-tolerant cultivars, water use efficient with acceptable yield. So that's a combination that's no doubt, you know, very difficult to come by. And where regulations completely, prohibit drilling for agricultural purposes, then ultimately dry land cultivation would be your only option in those scenarios. And so drought tolerance, I think, is a really important trait that we need to be looking at. And these are just some priorities that I put on here as the list, and I'm sure there are many others, but essentially looking at the physiological mechanisms of reduced productivity under drought stress, some of these, the mechanisms that limit our productivity, I think we do need to be looking at this. Identifying efficient irrigation strategies, and I've put plant-based approaches here, applying water where it's needed as the crop demands. There are many different strategies, sensor-based strategies, both for soil moisture as well. Identifying rapid and sensitive indicators of the onset of drought stress. So there are measures that we can use to detect drought stress, but how sensitive are they? How rapid are they? Because that's going to influence their utility in screening programs and that sort of thing. So I think ultimately understanding these responses will be essential to improving drought adaptation strategies. And so there's a book, I've just cited this here because I thought that it was applicable. There's the Stress Physiology in Cotton book. Loca and Oosterhaus and Ritchie have a chapter in there, and it really highlights not only what we know, but definitely what we need to investigate a little further. So what we were hypothesizing with some of this work was that the commercially available cultivars that we have available in Georgia would show different physiological responses to irrigation treatments. That differences in yield responses would be associated with declines in net photosynthetic rate as well, and that and this last hypothesis, I really didn't care for how it was worded, but essentially that plant-based measures of water status would be correlated with these in-season measures of productivity like net photosynthesis. So our objectives were to quantify physiological and agronomic responses of a range of cotton cultivars to irrigation treatments, and the importance of carbon assimilation and loss mechanisms under field conditions. And I think that field conditions is really important, as I think that chapter highlighted, that our field-grown plants do respond quite differently than pot-grown plants under more controlled conditions. And then to quantify the relationship between these measures of water status and net photosynthetic rate. And so this is just a quick overview. There was one location to this study, the Stripling Irrigation Research Park in Camilla, Georgia. Three cultivars there, two irrigation treatments, dryland and checkbook, and this was all overhead applied, randomized complete block design with four replications. And the leaf sampled throughout the season was the fourth main stem node below the apical meristem, and we began sampling at match head square stage. So just an overview of the irrigation treatment. This is the checkbook method, the 100% checkbook method. And overall, if you do the math on it, you'll be applying approximately 18 inches over the course of, I say you'll be applying, the total water requirement would be about 18 inches over the course of the growing season. This figures in rainfall and irrigation as well. And then this is just showing our treatment differences here, 17 inches under the dry land. We'll say probably rain-fed is a better term. And then the 100% checkbook, 24.3 inches. So we have some fairly large rainfall events that will supply more in a given week than the checkbook calls for, obviously. And then some of the measurements utilized in this study, we had infrared canopy temperatures. Both leaf and air temperatures were measured using type K thermocouples. The pressure chamber was used to measure both pre-dawn and midday water potential. Chlorophyll fluorescence, we measured the maximum quantum efficiency. That FVFM ratio is an indication of photosystem 2 stability there. And then actual quantum yield there is measured in illuminated leaves in the field. And then electron transport rate through photosystem 2. As well. And then combining that with the infrared gas analysis, using those two things together, we can calculate the net photo, you know, we have the net photosynthetic rates, but we can also calculate the gross photosynthetic rates, the dark respiration, photorespiration, and then of course stomatal conductance and transpiration. So here's a little bit of information on the site, both including temperatures, canopy temperatures, air temperatures. You don't see drastic differences there, but there are, on that sample date, the 19th of July there, you can see some small difference in air and leaf temperature. And it's interesting, this is measured immediately adjacent to the leaf surface, so there's probably some, you know, heat being generated from those leaves as well, as why you see the air temperature being somewhat different. The PAR levels were well above saturating levels for cotton. And then in D there, this is pretty interesting, and, you know, it goes back to some of what we've already heard about the canopy temperatures. There was a pretty big separation between the canopy temperatures there. And then the leaf-to-air vapor pressure deficit, it was not significantly different. Anyway, whenever we look at the water potential data, you can see that the drought treatment, the dry land check on certain dates, of course, there were significant differences in the pre-dawn water potentials and the midday water potentials. And one of the things I just kind of wanted to bring out here is, you know, the midday, you look at that, and there's a huge separation there, and there everything's, you know, there's pretty tight bars there, and it definitely indicative of, water stress, I would say. But the pre-dawn values, one of the things with pre-dawn is I actually have a lot more data on pre-dawn because I don't have to worry about cloud cover. Now, certainly getting out there before daylight to get the readings is another matter, but you know, you can collect a lot of data throughout the season and not have to worry about cloud cover interfering with the measurement. When we get to the photosynthetic rates, you can see that there was a significant decline in net photosynthesis. Now, those of you who came to, I'll just clarify this right now, those of you who wanted to see separations in the cultivar responses to drought stress, because it was in the title, there was just no interaction between cultivar and irrigation treatment effect for many of these parameters that was measured. So I'll just make that clear right now so that, you know, we can kind of move on there. I know that many people were probably wanting to see that. But anyway, the gross photosynthetic rates declined as well. Dark respiration was significantly lower. Obviously, the scale, they're all scaled the same, so it looks fairly small there, but it was significantly lower. The photorespiration rates in D were significantly higher. So this has been shown before in field-grown plants with the photorespiration rates. The respiration rates, I think, there's still some questions out there that needed to be answered on that. If you look at all of this, this is the fluorescence data. This is telling us about photosystem 2. If anything, you see that top one in A there, and I wasn't expecting this, but anyway, in A, the maximum quantum efficiency was a little bit higher. Now, anything over a 0.8 is a healthy leaf. So, photosystem 2, I would argue from all of these, that this other one's the actual quantum yield in B, and then the electron transport rates in C there. There's just no difference. I don't see any evidence for photosystem 2 being very sensitive to drought stress. And I have some, again, I've got some information tomorrow in a talk on thermal tolerance that'll show some of this a little bit further as well. The transpiration rates, again, that date really separates out pretty clearly. Where we had the greatest difference in water potential, we also had declines in transpiration and stomatal conductance, and then water use efficiency down there at the bottom as well. Now, the other thing I wanted to point out, there's kind of the debate on respiration. We talk about respiration increasing or decreasing depending on the severity of stress. We look at it as a percent or as a ratio of dark respiration to gross photosynthesis, then we see an actual increase. So using that as our denominator, we see that of the total amount of carbon that's assimilated, there's a greater percentage of it that's lost through dark respiration under drought stress. Just thought that would be another way to kind of look at the same set of data there. And then for the last part, to just kind of look at the relationship between some of these measures of water status, indirect and direct, you'll see in A we have infrared canopy temperature on the x-axis, in B we have predawn water potential, and in C we have the midday water potential, and then on the y-axis on all of these it's the net photosynthetic rate. So you can see that there's pretty strong responses there to these water status measurements, and they're correlated with the in-season measure of net photosynthesis. And then here's what it all, you know, it all comes down to. Again, this was to look at interaction. There were differences between cultivars. I'll point that out, but not interaction. And we're still waiting on the whole plot harvest data. So, but as you look at the irrigation treatment, there was about a 600-pound difference. And again, this was hand harvested. We're waiting on the machine pick data and the whole plot data to come in as well. So just overall, photosystem 2 was not negatively impacted under those water stress conditions, at least that we experienced this year. Net photosynthetic rate and gross and dark respiration, and then stomatal conductance and transpiration decline per unit leaf area. But again, that dark respiration as a function of gross photosynthesis was actually much higher under drought stress. Photorespiration increased under drought stress, and there was no interaction between the varieties, as I mentioned previously, which either means that there's no difference between these cultivars for the conditions we had this year. You know, it could just be that the stress is not severe enough. That's the other thing. That's why we repeat these studies. And then both the infrared canopy temperature, the midday, and the predawn water potential were indicative of water stress. But again, as I mentioned, the predawn measurement would not be as influenced by variation in cloud cover. And then the bottom line is yield was definitely affected in this study. So I'd like to thank the University of Georgia, Georgia Cotton Commission, all the underlying folks there are the co-authors on this, and then the cotton physiology team. And with that, I'll be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Got time for a few questions? Yes.
Yes.
So you made a lot of measurements, and you didn't show all the cultivar data, but how many cultivars did you have in that?
There were three. There were three cultivars, yes.
So which of all those, you know, you were talking about sensitive and easy to use and scale tools, which of those do you think is going to be the tool that you can apply to larger study?
I'm glad that you asked that, because I see a lot of this with the fluorescence data, because it's very rapid. And I'm a big fan of the fluorescence data. Now, you saw that it didn't show a significant difference there. However, there are other fluorescence parameters than those that I mentioned here. I would be interested in looking at that. And that's a study that my graduate student will be taking up, looking at those along with net photosynthesis, because the net photosynthetic rate, and we see that decline, and it's pretty sensitive to drought stress. And I think that should be kind of our standard for comparing some of these other measurements.
And I didn't catch, but what time of the day did you make measurements?
12 to 2.
I'm sorry?
12 to 2. And you saw the light intensities there. You know, we had saturating light intensities as well. That was kind of, and the standard from that, there's a Grimes and Yamada paper on water potential, and that was the standard time that they used to measure water status.
Any other questions? All right, thanks, John.